about Paul's commitment to ministering to these churches and also your thoughts on just who you are in this church. And we have all these officers sitting up here in the front. And that is this, that no one in this room is an island. You may think you are. You may desire to be. But if it's done right, and with regard to our worship as a church and our fellowship and our accountability and our submission to these men, no man, no woman, no child in this room is an island for themselves. We do not have, it is not us, maybe I should say it that way, it is not Trinity Church to have isolation among our members. And I say that to encourage you, I say it maybe to exhort you, depending on what your mentality is about the church. I want you to look at this map and see that on the right-hand side, it's not real easy to read, but you'll see on the right side the city of Antioch, and you'll see under that Sirius, I'm talking about far right, this is one of the great cities of the ancient world, and this is where Paul started his first missionary journey. This was the sending church. They sent him out. And you'll follow the arrows. He went to Cyprus and then sailed to Persia. And it's at Persia that he started traveling on land through this mountainous areas of another city called Antioch, Antioch of Pisidia. And then you'll see Iconium and Lystra and then Derbe. And what I want you to see, because I mentioned this last week and I want you to see it for yourself right before your eyes, that I want you to notice how close Derbe is to Antioch, the first Antioch, where he had, from where he had been sent, his sending church, how easy it would have been for him to travel just that small traveling area there over land back to the home church. And do you know what lies between Derbe and Antioch, Syria? Tarsus. Tarsus is where Paul was from. This was his hometown. Don't you know he longed to go back there where he grew up? It would have been very easy for Paul to say, well, I've made the circle. I finished my work. Now I'm just going to head back home. I'm going to go back through Tarsus and then I'm going to give my report to Antioch. But instead, and we emphasized this last week, he turns around and he retraces his steps through Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. Obviously taking the long way home. And if you've been half listening over the last 3 months, you'll know he took the more dangerous way home. So why did he do that? We asked that last week, but I didn't have these men 10, 20 feet away from me. I'm asking them pointedly, why did Paul turn around? Why did he, instead of taking the easy way, why did he go back the long way? Why did he go back the more dangerous way? The reason is that Paul knew that these Christians in these churches needed encouragement. They needed the strengthening. They needed leadership. They needed him. And that's where we find ourselves this morning as a church. You men up here are Paul and Barnabas. You could even make an argument, this is Paul over here and this is Barnabas. And your job, your calling, is to look out. Look out over Lystra. Look out over Iconium. Meaning, look out over the last year. Look out over many years previous and see where we've come. Where we've been. And it's your job to say, it's not time to rest. It's not time to go home, is to use the analogy. We need to retrace our steps, possibly. It's your job to see that there's work to be done. There are sheep that need to be have shepherding. There are disciples that need to be encouraged. Sheep that need to be strengthened and sheep that need your leadership. You could even say that 1423 is symbolic of our church as a whole. That 2000 was our first missionary journey together. Me as your pastor. As a church, we took our first missionary journey in the year 2000, and now we're at Derbe. sure would be easy to go home, wouldn't it? It'd be easy to go back to being the way that we were. But 1423 is a wake-up call. It's a call to us as a church to survey our work. As I said to these men, retrace our steps if we need to. Pray and fast. Select new leadership. Pray and fast some more. And then go. Move forward. Not back. Not look over our shoulders. But move forward in the direction that God would have us go. I want to look at an exposition of just this verse. If you'll notice, in verse 23, it says, "So when they had appointed elders..." Now this, in the Greek, this term appointed, it can actually mean elect. It can mean appointed. It can mean choose. It indicates, the word is used again in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 19, where the indication is electing by raising of hands. And then in Acts 10, 41, same word was used, and it meant to install directly. Kistemacher, in his commentary, talking about this word, he says, "To appoint actually means to approve by a show of hands in a congregational meeting. But that simplifies it for us a little bit, because we can identify with that. I don't know how easy it was. I don't think we really know exactly how they did it. But obviously the congregation prayed and they fasted over the selection process. Obviously they had some kind of vote. And then these men were brought before the apostles to be examined and to be approved. And then they were appointed. And all of this took place before they were ordained and installed. Much like our process. And you notice the verse continues because it says, "In every church." Meaning it's appointing of elders. This word elder is the word presbyteros. We get our word Presbyterian. It is a word in the Greek that is used interchangeably with the word episkopos, where you get the word episcopal, and it means bishop. It means oversight. That is the function of the elder. Episkopos is the function. Presbyteros is the adjective. It has to do more with their age. But elder is a ruling office. Acts 20:28 says, "Therefore take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God which He purchased with His own blood." And then the text continues, our text, verse 23, and it's kind of hard to determine what exactly is the object of what, because it says, "Having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed." That word means trusted. Again, Kistemacher, in his word, says, "After having spent some time with these churches, Paul and Barnabas entrusted them." He says it's a reference to the members of the church, so you men need to hear that. "Entrusted the members of the church to the care of the Lord." It's worth noting that these apostles are about the business of planting churches. And you need to know that's where I stand as your pastor. That's my passion. That is where the priority of our mission dollar is going to go, is to planting churches. We support a slew of parachurch organizations. I understand why. There are certain individuals in the church giving a lot of money to these places and ministries that warm your heart and things that are good ministries. But the priority of our church is and is going to be planting other churches. It's not enough to just establish a mission. It's not enough to simply establish some medical mission or an educational outpost. Believe it or not, I go as far as to say, it's not enough to just want, quote, converts. Or have a ministry where you can say, well, such and such, so and so many decisions were made in this. That's not enough. It's not the church. In a follow-up study on the Here's Life campaign of the mid-70s, found that of the 500,000 decisions that were made through this ministry, only 3% ended up in the church. 3% of those 500,000, quote, decisions for Christ. We're going to talk more about that, Lord willing, next week. What's a decision? What does it mean? When do we call it valid? But Paul didn't leave them. This is the point this morning. Paul didn't leave them in house churches. He didn't leave them without structure. He didn't leave them without order. He created, by God's leading, he created these offices. And he ordained these men to serve in these respective offices, these formal offices, if you will. Some people want to refer to this sort of thing as organized religion. They use that word with derision, and they say, I don't believe in organized religion. Well, I'm sorry to inform you, the New Testament, the early church, it was organized religion. And that's what we have here. Why? Because structure is important, and order is important, and officers are necessary, and leadership and authority are good, and church government is good, and church government is important, and it's important for you to put yourself voluntarily under the leadership of these men. It's very important for you to do that. Membership in a church is important. It's not only important, it's biblical. Those of you who are vacillating, and you've got to be careful what you say to visitors and regular attenders. You don't want to run them off, I know. But you've got to understand that drifting with the Spirit and just saying, well, I'll go here this Sunday, I'll go over here this Sunday, it's not good. It's very dangerous. It's dangerous for your family. And where you attend church, you should put yourself under the authority of that church. Because if you don't, not only is it not biblical for you to attend a church under which these people don't have authority over you, not only is it unbiblical, as I said, it's dangerous for you. It's not safe. It's not healthy for you. And it's wrong. So I encourage you to do that. Back to the thrust of what this verse is saying is what I want to say to these men is what's happening to you men today is bigger than yourself. And that's the way it should be, and that's the way you should want it to be. You should pray that your office in the church is, you should look at it and say, it's bigger than I am, because you represent God. Do you realize that? You are His shepherd. You are His servant. His hands, His feet, His mouth, His authority. When you visit the hospitals, which we're going to do more of as we get into our shepherding, and all of you will be called on to do that. As a teacher said, one of the professors in seminary, you are Christ for that person. And I didn't know if I liked that when I first heard it. I still don't know that I like it. But that's what you are. You are Christ. You represent Him to this flock. Because, and I say that reverently and humbly, it's because you're an under-shepherd. But you are a shepherd of this flock. It's your duty to shepherd. It's your duty to disciple and strengthen these individuals and lead them. 1 Peter 5, the elders who are among you, I exhort. I am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by constraint, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. Nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And here's why. This is scary. It says, when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. You'll give an account. All of you men will give an account for how you led these sheep. Their blood is on your hands. You're accountable for every one of them. You're accountable for everyone that's on the roll of the church. You'll answer for every one of them. It's leadership. That's what it's about. Paul turned around and he didn't head home because he knew that those churches needed leadership. And leaders lead where people wouldn't otherwise go. That's your job. Lead them where they wouldn't go if they didn't have you. What are your plans? I know you've got plans. You've got plans for your businesses. You're very committed to plans for your businesses, plans materially. Where do you want to be? 10 years from now, 20 years from now. You've got plans for your family, plans for your children. What are your plans spiritually to grow? You men, what have you thought about with the new year? What have you sat down and said specifically, this is the area that I'm going to be salt and light in Montgomery, Alabama this year? Have you done that? What are your plans for Trinity Church? Surely, as officers, you've thought about that. What are your goals for the church? Where do you want to see this church go? Where would you want to see these sheep? Where do you want to see them be at the end of your term? And then what are you going to do to see that they get there? You willing to think outside the box? Are you willing to spend the time praying? It's a serious job, very serious, and you have a very serious obligation to make plans. Not materialistic plans, not selfish plans, Christ-centered plans for this church. And say, I'm going to take them there. A year ago on this Lord's Day, it was really, I think it was January the 2nd, but it was the first Lord's Day of the new year. I stood before you. My knees were knocking. They still knock. The lights were bright. They're still bright. I remember coming in here before and thought, and stood up here before that first Sunday and thought, this is okay. And then when I came in, I was like, whoa, this is bright and hot. But we laid out four goals, and they were more or less priorities. We said, this is what we're going to prioritize in our church, and everything that we're going to do is going to have to do with these four items. Do you remember? They all started with P, and the first, they weren't in any special order, but the first was to pastor you. And I told you, I felt that I was called here to pastor you. That was the understanding I got from the pulpit to me too, was you needed someone to just love you. And I tell you, on behalf of the McRoberts family, we love you immensely. You're easy to love. And we thank you for loving us. We praise God for that. The pastoring. The preparation for leadership. That was number two. Preparing our leadership. And we committed. We said we're going to commit to 12 weeks, a 12-week study. And the men that were interested in serving as officers in the years to come, we said, you got to take this course because it's going to set the stage for who we are. And came the men and the women, hundreds of you, took that course. We praise the Lord for that. We said, preach the Word. And I told you on that Lord's Day morning, I needed time to prepare. You've given me that time. I thank you for that. And then we said, pray. And we said, if we didn't do anything else in 2000, it was okay. And I think we did that. Through these men's leadership right here. I believe that we did that. I believe we prepared much of the leadership. God has blessed the preaching of the Word, and He's answered our prayers. We praise Him for it. Well, this year, I say we look back. I say we do the same thing that Paul, in the sense that we retrace our steps. We move it up. And again, by the grace of God, we would say as a church, we're ready. We're ready to take it to another level. We're ready to take it to another notch. We say, well, we're going to go back and say, I'm going to pastor you. I want to pastor you. I want to love you more than I love you now. I want to stand here, God willing, January 2002, and love you more than I ever thought that I could love you, and hug you and get to know names better. I'm looking forward to that Victoria Directory to come out again. But I want to do that. I want to know you. I want to know you by name. Preach the Word faithfully and pray. We just continue to do that. God's provided us with a man to come on staff tomorrow, Blake Smith, a man that has a heart for young people, just has a heart. You're just going to love him because he's just that kind of person that people just like him. And he wants to disciple our young people. He wants to pour his life into the junior high and high schoolers. And God willing, we're going to hire him an assistant, a female, and we're looking for her. We're very close I think, to hiring another man. I don't know exactly how the last interviews are going to go, but it looks like God is leading a man. You know that his heart and his passion is in discipling men and small groups and Christian education. Now, who knows a church that needs that? I do. Right here. Of all things we need, and God is sending us. This man's been ordained for 6 years, got 3 children. I act like we've hired him and he's gone, but just excited about the fact that that may work out. In about a month, January, I think the 29th, if we're going to have these sessions on the Lord's Day, that we would train the officers, the class of 2000 and 2001, 2 and 3, and then again, any men who think they might serve as officers and be shepherds in the church. We're going to use our emeritus men as well in this program, but our shepherding will spend 6 weeks training the shepherds and then possibly 6 months purging our roles and getting all that in shape and getting the organization behind it, and then, Lord willing, in January of 2002, implementing shepherding. That doesn't mean it's going to be a program. That doesn't mean that, well, I'm involved in shepherding, or I'm not involved in shepherding. That's not it. You're all going to be involved in shepherding, because that's going to be the umbrella. You will be shepherded. Okay? There will be shepherding taking place, again, God willing. We pray in 2001 that we've only scratched the surface of what God will do in our worship services. Pray down the Spirit of God in this place. I have, my mind is just reeling with things in every department in our church, of things to change and things to better and things to do and hiring here and there and getting the right people in place. And we've got men who are retiring from their businesses and who want to spend more time at the church and they want to disciple people and lead small groups. This is an exciting day in the life of Trinity Church. God is doing a great, great work. And it's not something that we're puffed up about and that we have pride about. It should humble us. It should make us fall on our faces before God, that He would love us enough to raise up these kind of people like these men to lead us into this year. We'll have an elders retreat in about a month and a half. We've got a missions conference. It's our 25th missions conference, 25th anniversary. Fernando Ortega, if you're interested in Christian music, but he's at the very top of the Christian music industry, and he's going to have a concert here, Lord willing, in April. RYM, we're going to 2 Reform Youth Movements this summer, junior high and high school. Rio Bravo, have you heard? Do you know that Rio Bravo, we asked for 150 people from our church? Do you know there's a waiting list now? There's 152 signed up. We had 75 beds for women on one side of the dorm, 75 men beds on the other side. Guess what? 150 people, the first 150 people to sign up, there are 75 women and 75 men. Tell me God doesn't have His hand on this church and our missions. And I encourage you still to sign up if you want to. We need the waiting list. You don't know what will happen. With some who can and maybe wouldn't be able to go at the last minute or whatever. But I encourage you, don't think that you shouldn't sign up or you missed out. Get on the waiting list. And then if you'll take this handout and look at Wednesday nights, where it says action, which is an acrostic for all church things. That's a very theological term. All church things in one night. This is another direction in our desire to have a church that is family friendly. We're trying very hard to not have these meetings on Sunday afternoons is one thing, and then, as some will say, I'm up here every day, which I love having you up here every day, but I understand that some of you up here eat lunch and then that night for another meeting. And so we're going to say everything on Wednesday, all the meetings on Wednesday, these committee meetings, which we're not even going to use the word committee on the session. They're going to find out about this tomorrow night. They're going to be ministries, and we're going to spend more time praying at these ministry meetings. And they'll meet Wednesday. Possibly they would want to meet. Some might meet for breakfast. There'll be a lot of lunch meetings then. But they'll also meet that night. I want you to see this schedule because there's going to be more time for eating. How do you like that? More time for supper. We're backing the time up to 5 o'clock. And then carrying it forward, I didn't really realize that we closed up at about 5:45, but we're actually served supper now until 6 o'clock. The choirs will be dismissed. Ed and the choir graciously, and you see their sacrifice. Really, this is a good example of the choir sacrifice, and that they'll go to their practice at 5:45. Their practice till 7. But the others will have fellowship, and it's going to be just a lot more laid back. It's going to be more of an old-fashioned family night supper. I hear from the young couples, all I do is get in there, I feed my children, they leave, and then it's time to go to the Bible study, and I never have time to really take a breath. Well, now we're going to give you time to take a breath. Sit back, enjoy each other. That's what we need to do. We need to get to know each other, wear the name tags, and just have that kind of fellowship, which will last till about 10 after 6 or 6:15, and then we'll be led in favorite hymns. I know some of you will love that. Favorite hymns, psalms, spiritual songs. We're going to have testimonies and just some real prayer for our church. And pray for our sick and hurting. Pray for these meetings that will take place that night. All these committee meetings will be moved and then diaconate in session again. The desire, hoping to have a family-friendly church. I know I used that word last year. What did the church do with these plans that they had? They sanctified their plans. They set them apart. They prayed for their plans. Look at verse 23 again. So when they had appointed elders in every church and prayed with fasting, they were serious about it. Not just prayer, they fasted over their plans. I encourage you to be doing that. I encourage you the first Wednesday of every month, but it may be that you have a major decision in your life. It could be anything from a vacation in your family to anything. You say, this needs prayer and fasting. And please be doing that. Work that out in your spiritual life. Let me give you just one closing illustration and have a little application for these men, and then we'll go into our other part of the service. But there's a story of these three ministers who were discussing the proper posture in prayer. And they were in the minister's office, and there was a telephone repairman there putting in a new system. And one of the ministers said, the best posture for prayer is with your hands raised. That's when I'm closest to God. And the other one said, no, the when I'm closest to God is when I'm on my knees. Knees are the best posture for prayer. And then if they're out-humbling each other, say, well, no, it's when you're on your face. That's what the third one said. That's when I'm closest to God. Well, the repairman had all that he could take of that and interrupted them and said, I found that the most earnest and most powerful prayer that I've ever prayed, the closest I was ever to God, was when my safety belt broke and I was on the top of a pole and I found myself upside down, dangling 50 feet above the ground over a rocky gorge. And I was hanging there by one thin wire by my ankle. And what I want to say to these men is that's the way you ought to minister in this church. That's the way you shepherd and the way you pray and the way you fast. The way that you disciple and the way that you lead the church is if you are hanging from a pole upside down 50 feet above the ground. And by this thin wire around your ankle. And the truth is, you are ministering like that. You are ministering by a thin wire dangling from where you dangle. You know what that thin wire is? It's the will of God. And I'm talking about dependency upon God, where you will be men of prayer. It's only by the will of God that you will even wake up tomorrow morning, much less wake up and have food and drink and a family that loves you and children. It's only by the will of God that you're going to wake up and have a church to serve. And so I encourage you to minister among us with that kind of dedication, that kind of dependency upon God. Now I'd ask you to take your other handout, and you'll see a list of these names. And I want to recognize, present to you this class of 2003. I'm going to ask these men if they would stand as I call their name. For the elders in the class of 2003, there will be Marvin Carroll, Bill DeBose, Frank Ellis, Jack Noble, and Barry Teague. And then for the class of 2003 with the diaconate, let me mention first these men who have been ordained Christ Bishop. Robert Hogan, Will Sellers, and Rupert Wilson. And then we have five men to be ordained this morning. David Grimes, Bart Harmon, Jerry Lash, Philip Reagan, and Todd Romanowski. And then I'll ask these men to stand as I call your name in the class of 2002 for Elder John Albritton, Lewis Chapman, Stephen Fox, Philip Jadair, Bill Joseph, and Bob Thedford. Class of 2001, Glenn Bedsole, Arthur Hester, Michael Schreer, Irby Thomas.